G'day Jets fans, it's me, David, and we are here today to do another review preview for the Jets stream. We are going to be having a look back at the Jets' venture into the Asian Champions League, where they were defeated 4-1 to Kashima Antlers, and look ahead to this Sunday's clash with Adelaide United in the A-League. And joining me tonight, first of all, is Ferns. How are you?
G'day, mate. How you going?
Great. Nice to be back. Second person, Mitch. How are you, mate?
I'm back. It's the original trio plus one.
Plus one, and that plus one for a fourth person tonight is Mr. Inspiration Payne himself, Joel Goodsir. How are you?
That's my Queensland, you know, hello, because I'm in Queensland.
A blank recording, because there was nothing that we heard.
that came through a bit garbled there, Joel. It was just, g'day.
I think his responses are just like avoiding daylight savings time or something.
The curtains are fading as we speak.
His response through in about an hour.
Please think of the cows. opening question this week, guys. Mitch, we're going to start with you. You're starting a hip-hop band with Ernie Merrick. What's the band's name?
Because Ernie smiles so much all the time, it has to be Ernie's Grills, as in, like, you know, those big teeth metal grills that all the hip-hop guys wear. And I'm sorry if it steals anyone's thunder if they've thought of this, but surely the first song has to be No Subs, as in, like, No Scrubs by TLC.
I can assure you no one's thought of that.
I didn't give it that much thought, Mitch, but thank you for giving it that much thought yourself, mate. That's terrific. Joel, what about you?
This is the most prep I've ever put into a pod, by the way, and that was it.
And that's including the one that you hosted. Joel, yeah. Yours, mate.
Well, our hip-hop band is the Blether Boys, B-L-E-T-H-E-R, which I Googled, and means a grand Scottish word that simply means to chat away, the act of talking, speaking, etc., which is kind of what hip-hop people do, so Blether Boys.
Right, very good. I'm going to go with something slightly different. I'm actually going to incorporate his name into it. I'm going to say it's Ernie Merrick and the Haggiswood. So that's my group. I wanted to try and fit a Shaka in there somehow. After Anthony, actually, when we posed the opening question in the group chat beforehand, sent us the picture of Ernie Merrick dropping the Shaka when he presented Joey Champs with his shirt last year. And he's actually Mona Lisa smiling in that one. So, Ferns, you're last up. What about you, mate?
I've literally been racking my brain for all of probably 4 minutes. And can I just say that I think this might officially make us the widest podcast on the internet. really racking my brain, trying to come up with something. The only thing I could really come up with was Run SCOT as opposed to Run DMC. So, yeah, that's all I could come up with.
If you've got something better, and I don't think it's going to be hard to do, get in touch with us here at the Jetstream on any of our social media pipes. Guys, we're going to jump straight into having a look at having a chat about the Kashima Antlers game. And first of all, we'll start with the highlights, thanks to Fox Sports.
The Newcastle Jets have failed to qualify for the group stages of the Asian Champions League after a 4-1 defeat to Kashima Antlers. It was a chaotic first half, with the defending champions proving the classier side. It took 18 minutes for the home side were on the scoreboard first, only to have a Ronnie Vargas find the equaliser 6 minutes later. The Antlers piled on the pressure, and despite some quick hands from Glenn Moss, they held a 2-1 lead at the first break. Playing their third game in just 7 days, Newcastle were running out of steam as the Antlers took the game by the horns.
It's going to stay in. Chance brewing perhaps. Serginho on the move in the middle at the back post. He's been found as well. And that seals the deal. Beautiful work down this near side by the substitute Yamaguchi. And Serginho has a double.
The 4-1 victory secures Kashima a spot in the group stages, while Newcastle begin their long journey home empty-handed. They'll be quick to put the defeat behind them, turning all their attention to making the A-League final series, which begins with their clash against Adelaide United on Sunday.
Thanks again, Fox Sports, for the highlights there. Joel, disappointing way to finish our ACL campaign. Kind of, it stopped before it even got started.
Yeah, absolutely. But the finish was the start. Yeah, it was disappointing. It would have been more disappointing if Kashima didn't play really well. I think everyone kind of agrees that we just got, you know, completely dominated. So, yeah, very disappointing, but would have been a lot worse if we played badly and lost, and they played badly and lost, rather.
Yeah, and Joel says that as Joel says, Mitch, Kashima, straight from the offset, that they appeared to be a class above the Jets.
For sure, and, like, I don't know the exact figures, but someone's written online, like, our salary cap is, what, 3 or 4 million, and they're spending, like, 30 million on their squad or something like that. Like, three of their players cover our full wages. It was always a massive gap in quality between the two teams to begin with, and it just showed from the start to finish.
Ferns, looking at the formation that Ernie Merrick set out, it was one that surprised me when the squad was named. I actually thought Redenta was going to start out on the left where Kane Shepherd had played the previous game against Procedure. It turned out not to be the case, that we went with a back five. Canter to the Boogs in the centre, Canter to the right of him. It's a formation that we've tried a few times. We shifted that to that formation against Perth with limited success. We tried it again a couple of weeks after that. And does it interest you that Ernie Merrick looked to continue to persist with that formation, and that we actually took that approach into the game?
Well, I think it was mainly deployed due to the fact that we really needed to make sure that we tried to really man up in defence and make sure that we sort of cut down the passing lanes, and we made sure we had plenty of players in the defensive third to try and stop Kashima attacking, because I'm sure that Ernie and the coaching staff would have seen the. And we all obviously saw it during the telecast, the absolute crispness and the speed in which Kashima play and are able to get balls forward and break into space. And you've always got runners going every which way. It's really a, you know, I looked at the way Kashima played with not a small amount of jealousy, because that's really what I want to see. I mean, not just my local team, Newcastle, playing. This is sort of what I think Ange was trying to do with the Socceroos to an extent. But it's really difficult to do that when you don't have the players that have that sort of level of technical ability. So, yeah, really surprised by the back three, the three centre backs, and then the two fullbacks sort of deployed as wing backs a little bit. I think he was trying to have a lot of bodies in defence, but then try and be able to break. But, I mean, you could see just the difference in speed in which we tried to counter-attack when we got the ball versus how Kashima counter-attacked when we turned over possession to them. You know, I lost count at 5 million. But they were just able to get the ball on the deck, and they were always able to find a player in space or be able to man up on a player that was defending and get past them. It was just they were a really classy opponent, and unfortunately we really didn't have the answers to counter that. We needed everybody to be on the game, and I think the amount of games we've had in short succession, plus including the travel, I think it was, you know, we were up against it from the get-go.
It was interesting, Canter there, Mitch. I mean, he deserves his place in the team, but for me, that place is in midfield. And I think that we could have had not a different outcome, but perhaps a different level of presence there had Canter been deployed in that holding role. If Ernie Merrick wants to go with five at the back, but does it surprise you that he didn't pick Lachlan Jackson there ahead of, I guess, Matthew Redenton in the team?
Not really. I mean, Canter's way more experienced than Lachlan Jackson is, and Canter's proved that he can be a centre-back in the past. I didn't see it as an outrageous move to begin with. Like, in hindsight, it was an awful move, but it, you know, he was going for something. He thought Canter could do a job there. Didn't quite work out. So I didn't see it outrageous, but now I'm shooting fire at it. It ended up terrible.
Anything you want to add on that, Joel, before we go on to talking about a bit about Kashima's
yeah.
approach?
I kind of feel like if you put your pessimistic hat on, you can say, oh, Ernie took the approach of five at the back and wanted to defend, and it's a really pessimistic way to go. And I think if you put your optimistic hat on, you can say, well, actually, they're wing backs and it's three at the back, and the two, you know, fullbacks are there to overload and overlap. And if we were ever going to win this game, we'd have to be able to throw everything forward to outscore them. And so, you know, possibly it was a masterstroke, but clearly it wasn't, because it didn't come off. But I agree with you. I think the reason why the wingbacks couldn't push forward is because we were losing out and being dominated in the midfield because we were lacking Kantorovsky there to be our enforcer. And so we were just always on the back foot, and therefore we were playing a defensive five at the back, too deep the whole you know, especially second half.
Just to jump in, Dave, I'm just wondering what would have been whether we would have had more of the midfield if instead of going to a back five with the two in front, we would have tried sticking with the back four and having three in defensive midfield in defence. And when we got the ball, we'd have been able to push one or two of those defensive midfielders further forward and give us more impetus and attack. From the get-go, Canada just didn't look comfortable in that position. Johnny Katrumbas, you know, he's done marvellously to get over his cancer scare and be back in the team, but he didn't look comfortable either. The other guys in defence looked pretty stable, but you're right. Canada is best position's always in defensive midfield, and if we'd have had a midfield three of Roy Jensen, Kantorovsky and Yagarkovich screening that back four when the guys from Kashima were swarming forward in attack, we'd have been able to force the turnover a bit further up the park and be able to counterattack a little bit closer to their goal rather than all the way back in you know, almost our 18-yard boxes. A lot of the time was when we got those turnovers, and we just, by the time we got the ball upfield, they were set back in defence, they'd swarm back and they just did everything with a surprising amount of speed. I mean, you know, someone who's watched those J-League games with any regularity probably wouldn't be surprised with the speed at which the Japanese teams tend to do things, but we don't really get to see very much J-League, and I think a lot of us would have been surprised just with the precision and like I said, the speed and the speed of decision making from the players from the opposition. They were just able to, you know, make those quick decisions, and it just seemed we weren't able to do that ourselves.
It certainly highlights a great disparity at this current stage between the J League and the A League. I guess we are the sixth. They're the seventh. How could I forget? The seventh, currently seventh ranked team in the competition. We're in the lower half of the competition. Kashima are the reigning champions, third place in the J-League last year. And they looked at it. It's, I guess, Joel, to any nailed-on Arden supporter, of course, they're going to say, the Jets can win, the Jets can. And look, I've said it as well. I thought that there was a chance that we could. Really needed the chips to line up for us, but they didn't. In this case, and the class of Kashima certainly showed in that game. Are we going to look at this as perhaps what we have achieved here is unreasonable, given that we haven't actually progressed? Or are we going to look and say, well, you know, we were handed a really tough draw, maybe this is okay where we got to. This is where we expected to get to. How do you think we'll look back on
this? We may have expected more, but I don't think we had all done our respective homework and realised just how classy Kashima were and are, especially in their off-season without having played a competitive game in 2 months. That's what I thought would get us over the line, our match fitness, the cool weather, you know, our recent patch of good form. I thought we might have had a shot, and we were still the underdogs, or always the underdogs, especially playing away. When we equalised, you know, there was hope. Even when we went 2-1 down, I thought, geez, if we could be 2-2 by the break, there's hope. But that second half, they were devastating in attack, wave after wave. And therefore, I just kind of concede that that's as good as we could have hoped for, and there's lessons to be learnt. But, you know, we walk out with our head not hung, just kind of going, wow, we were outplayed severely.
A question for you, Dave. Oh, I got a question for you, sorry. I was just like, did we not respect the amount of travel involved to actually get to Japan and play? Like, we're the Jets who notoriously struggle against Perth and Wellington at their home grounds. Like, did we respect the travel enough? The Australian national team doesn't do well in Japan either.
I think given the... unless we were given the week off after the procedure game, we played an extra game to get us that week ahead in the A-League, or we made it up post-Asian Champions League campaign, I don't think there's much else that the team could have literally done. They headed off at 5 a.m. on the Saturday, the day after the game, to get there. I honestly don't think there's anything else that they could have done, aside from having the A-League reschedule our match against Melbourne City and go from there. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah. Mate, well, coming back to you then, I mean, one thing that really struck me with the Jets was and it's been touched on a number of times already, just how easily we're turning over the ball. Do you think this is one of the lessons we'll take away as a club, as perhaps hopefully a competition, also just look at it as a sport within this country, just how much respect the Japanese team had for the ball, their ability on the ball to move it quickly, sharply, in and amongst the players, where we were passing down blind alleys, looking to hoof the ball forward to try and just clear it or play a very direct approach at the game and bypass the midfield because it really wasn't there at times. Do you think that we're going to take anything like that away from it?
Oh, for sure. Like, I've heard heaps of people last night and today talking about how, you know, the Australian curriculum has gone the wrong way and we've gone the Dutch way and what has Japan done? Like, you just looked at their players, how composed they were under severe pressure, like in tight spaces. It was ridiculous. And then you looked at Radenton and at times Yugarkovic, but I'm picking on Radenton mostly. Every time he got the ball in like a pretty high octane area, he just passed it straight to a red shirt. It was ridiculous. And the amount of respect you've got to give the technique of the Japanese players is phenomenal. And that's from a club perspective, but also just from a curriculum perspective.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, Ferns, looking at the first goal that they scored, Glenn Moss had I thought, quite a good first half. If it weren't for him and the number of saves that he was making, the game could have been out of sight by half time.
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely was the man of the match for me, just to get that out of the way. Fairly early on, he definitely pulled so many good saves out and had to, basically. That really kept the scoreline. I mean, as much as 4-1's a respectable scoreline, it could have been probably, you know, 7 or 8-1 if any of those other chances. He had some really good shots coming at him. It was just, I think, disappointing to concede the first goal. It would have been probably in the plans for Ernie Merrick to get through, maybe try and get to halftime without conceding, and then look to try and capitalize on a, you know, hopefully tiring Kashima in the second half. That didn't actually happen. They kept running right until the final whistle and could probably play another game right after full time. But yeah, it was Glenn Moss certainly, you know, and if he was, you know, 5 or 6 years younger, there would probably be a few Asian teams standing up and taking notice of that performance and maybe be looking at trying to get him off us at the end of our season, because he certainly put in a performance that belied his age, because he's pushing, what, 35, 36 now?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
He's so, in the Herald today that this is likely, he's not likely to get another shot at Asia.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's just a shame. I mean, he's been around a couple of the teams in the A-League. He was obviously a shot stopper at Melbourne Victory for a while, and then over at Wellington Phoenix, and then to us. He's been around for a while, and it just seems that he's really come on in the last couple of seasons, I think. I recall some good performances from him during Wellington Phoenix. Obviously, they've needed a goalkeeper in the last couple of seasons to perform above and beyond, and he certainly done that, which was why I think most people were really happy when we ended up picking him up after, you know, thinking we were going to lose Jack Duncan pretty soon, and that did come to pass. So it was a good pickup from our recruiting department. But yeah, it's just, like I said, it's just a shame he's sort of maybe just peaked a little bit too late in his career to maybe look at that big money move. I mean, goalkeepers do tend to mature later. There are, you know, 40, 41-year-olds running around. It might end up getting a really lucrative offer from one of those smaller Asian leagues, like, you know, maybe looking at Malaysia or, you know, any of those other smaller countries with developing leagues. He might end up getting a big money offer there. But yeah, it might be a little bit long in the tooth for a J-League team or a K-League team for Korea or even one of the big Middle Eastern leagues. So then it might just be a little bit too far for him. They might be looking at getting a younger keeper in.
The Jets equalised, Joel, midway through the half with Ronnie Vargas, and he's now scored 3 in 3. I think it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit. People being quite critical, we're now starting to see a Ronnie that's starting to deliver goals in his game. That's really exciting, and with him off contract at the end of the season, the Jets might. We roundly thought that he was probably going to be a player that would be let go, but it might mean the Jets turn and have a look if we can start to get goals from midfield from our marquee player.
Yeah, we've been seeing some finishing class, and what I love about Ronnie is he's super confident on the ball, super confident. And yes, he doesn't always retain possession, but he's just so great when he's on the ball. And I love watching him still, you know, from the moment Rolls-Royce was wheeled out last season. I just love his confidence on the ball and his composure. We saw in the game against Jakarta, I think, where he was in the box and he just stopped and put his foot on top of the ball and moved it around and then banged it into the top of the net or whichever one that was. But brilliant. I love it. Do I think he's going to be retained? I'm not confident he will be. I'm not sure he has shown enough, even with the latest run. I would imagine the Jets would have already made up a lot of their minds on players for next season, especially ones on close to $1 million. So yeah, we'll wait and see, but still love watching him.
I mean, we'll look at the goal just before that we conceded just before half time, Mitch. And it was, I think, first of all, we gave a lot of space to the player to cross it in. And it was Yamamoto who finished it off. 32 minutes. So it was sort of hit back straight after the Jets had equalised. I put that down to a lot of confusion between Kantorovsky and Katrumbas in there. I think Johnny needed to attack the ball. He was a player that was coming towards it. It was over the top of Kander, but I think Kander's movement back confused Johnny insofar as whose ball it was, and Yamamoto exploited that opportunity and that space to convincingly head home. I don't think that happens if we play four at the back, do you? And what do you put that goal down to?
I 100% agree that Katrumbas needed to attack it. In those kind of areas, you're not being polite. You're making shit happen kind of thing. I think part and parcel of it is maybe Katrumbas has been brought up more as a centre mid and not kind of a right back as much, is my understanding, because he conceded a pretty similar goal, what was it, a month ago or so against Brisbane Roar. And we put it down to him being gassed. We put it down to him being gassed then because of the end of the game. But really, it could have just been his lack of awareness because he doesn't know how to play the role as well. So I don't know. Would it happen with the four at the back? I think it did against Roar. So, yeah.
It was interesting to note, too, Dave, that during the commentary, I can't remember who it was that was commentating, but one of them said that it was evident from about 30, 35 minutes in, I think, that Katrumbas was getting down on his haunches whenever there was a break in play. It looked like he wasn't completely 100% up to speed with the match, so I don't know whether he was fatigued or maybe that might have contributed to conceding that goal, but I did notice in commentary that it wasn't immediately obvious to me when I was watching the telecast, because I think a lot of it occurred off camera, but they did mention a couple of times that they thought Katrumbas looked gassed already, and that was, you know, two-thirds of the way through the first half.
He played three games beforehand, so it's not surprising. But
I think one of their best two players was Abe, who was their left winger, who was strictly on Katrumbas, and Katrumbas got it handed to him all night. Like, Dave, were you surprised that Ernie didn't address that and put someone else on him?
Yeah, yes. I think that whole right hand side was probably the weak area of the pitch for us. I didn't really see Dimmy get into the game too much. I thought he was quite innocuous. Inconspicuous. Like he just wasn't there. Katrumbas add in Kandarovsky as well, and we were really struggling down that right hand side down the right hand side of our formation. It surprised me then that Ronnie was the player that was first substitution, but apparently he has sustained an injury. That is some of the rumours that are going around that I've read. For Dimmy to then move centrally. Yes, it surprised me that it wasn't addressed sooner, and by the time, because we in some ways did, the game was gone. I guess the penalty. All right, the penalty. I have no problems with the penalty, Ferns. Did you see it that way, or are you seeing it as Boogs is probably hard done by?
No, I saw that as a stonewall. I couldn't see any issue with it. It's just, you know, a defence, there's only so much we could do. Bugard's known for going in a little bit rashly occasionally. A lot of the time he gets away with it, just purely because of his experience. And he's a lot of the time able to time it against A-League attack, but trying to get away with that sort of thing against J-League attack, where it's, you know, 2-3 times faster. Not much you can do, really. You just have to hold your hands up and say, I don't know why he protested that much. It looked like, well, yeah, he does. It looked like he was trying to convince the ref it was a dive. But, you know, I don't know whether they use VAR in the Champions League, but it was no way a clear and obvious error, so it was never going to be overturned. So I don't really know what protesting does. I mean, yeah. Hold your hands up and just say, look, it looked like he dived or he went down really soft. I couldn't see that it was a soft penalty. I saw there was plenty of contact there and the ball was away. So, you know, sorry, Boogs, but that was a stonewall. Can't really argue with it, unfortunately.
Bogart has to be the A-League I didn't do it boy, honestly.
Well, he gets away with it.
I think Alex Brosk almost takes that.
Yeah, Brosk owns that, the dog.
Yeah, Brosk is right up there for that. Maybe that can be an opening question later, but Brosk for me. Joel?
The only thing he's got going for him is his hirsute beard. Everything else is balls.
Or even that scruffy. It's not even that beard scruffy, Joel. It's not well kept. It's not manicured. It's not kept under control like yours. It's shaggy and wild. So I'll call that a rubbish beard as well, along with the rest of his.
You're gonna make me blush, mate.
Well, you know, professional standards and all that. You'd think that captain of one of the biggest clubs in the A-League would also want to look professional, but apparently not.
Mm.
Fair enough. We've got Joel, gents. I'm actually going to come to each of you with this question. The starting 11, our prime starting 11, our first choice squad, they've played 120 minutes, they played 90 minutes against Kashima, they've been smashed. They've played 120 minutes against Procedure, they struggled to form a coherent team, they've been forced to extra time by a team that we roundly expected we would have beaten in the 90 minutes. The game before that was a 1-1 draw with Wellington Phoenix. They were lucky to get away with that at home. Not a particularly convincing performance. It was just the fact that Glenn Moss saved a penalty late on that they were there. I'm purposefully excluding the result against City because that was strongly considered to be a second-string team. I mean, we are undefeated in the league in three, and our season, there's a bit of life that's coming back into it. Joel, I'll start with you. Do you think that this result could have a detrimental effect on our season and derail it? Or do you think, because it is the first team that's been involved and what they have been involved in recently, haven't been the convincing, strong performances that we've been hoping for? Or do you think that we will just treat the next game as it comes? how do you think this result impacts the rest of our season?
It's a good question. I think
Thank you.
Overall...
Well, they had to be one. They had
Don't
to be
get carried away. It wasn't that good, but it's all...
Thanks, Joel.
Overall, I don't think it's going to derail the season. I thought the season was already derailed. I actually think it could help us get back on track, that we don't have more ACL games to play. We can now focus on trying to make up that 6-point deficit, which 4 weeks ago was an 11-point deficit. And we were all saying amongst ourselves, you know, there's no hope of getting into finals. Well, now you get two or three wins on the trot and all of a sudden you could be in fourth. So it's just a matter of leapfrogging Adelaide, City and Wellington. I think the fact that we played ACL reminded everyone that we're good enough to, you know, that we were that good last year, that we qualified, and a few of those teams above us did. I'm thinking we'll come back all the better for it, even though the travel, even though lots of minutes in the legs, still going to be a good thing.
Ernst, do you hold hope?
Yeah, it's well, I think we're going to know the answer to this question by full time of the game against Adelaide on Sunday. It's going to be interesting to see what effect this game has on the players' confidence. I'm sure Ernie's going to be in there going, look, we went in there, we tried our best, we were up against it with the travel and the heavy schedule and everything else. We did what we could, but we just couldn't match it. But we have what it takes to match it with players, with the teams at home in the A-League. So it's just going to be interesting to see what mindset the players play against Adelaide with, because we go ahead and win that game and we cut that deficit again if results go our way on the weekend. And the confidence is back. We can treat that result against Kashima as an outlier. It's, you know, we did what we could, but we were up against a much classier opponent than anything we're going to come up with against in the A-League, because I haven't seen any team in the A-League play with that sort of technique and that sort of performance. But if we go into the game against Adelaide with our head down, then that could become problematic, because I think confidence is a big issue with us at the moment. Our confidence has been really up and down, with players missing, players not having the season that they had the season before. Everything we've tried has not quite come off. We've got some good results. We've had a couple of good performances, but they've been the exception rather than the norm. So it's going to be really – I can't answer the question that you posed, Dave, regardless of how good it was. So it's going to be interesting to see how they perform on Sunday and what team's going to be selected, but obviously we're going to talk about that in a minute. Personally, I'm hoping that the team just go, look, we tried, we just weren't good enough, but we are good enough to match it with these other teams in the A-League, and we're going to be able to close that gap and sneak our way into finals, which I think will probably help us get on a little bit more of a run towards in the final eight games.
Mitchie, what about you?
First off, I want to say this is a terrific question and thank you for asking it.
Stop fucking up to me. It's clearly the best question that's ever been asked in this pod.
I agree. Apart from that time that you asked me that Central Coast Mariners question about how they were leading and then they conceded like that second, that was probably number two. Anyway, I think that it's not coming down to the team and their performance as much as kind of like what Ferns was hinting on is the individuals. Like, the only two players I thought that stepped up last night was Topor Stanley and Moss. They were clearly our two best, in my opinion. And then the third player that remotely looked like he was on the level to compete with the ball was Ronnie Vargas at times, just with his composure on the ball. Basically, I'm looking at players like Jimmy Petrados, who, you know, had a stellar year last year, had all the Socceroos and all that kind of stuff, but he has just dipped so much this year. And I think this is the biggest wake-up call for him to say, hang on a minute, I just went to Japan and I was completely anonymous and no agent will remember my name from last night because I didn't step up in any way. So I think it's going to bring down some of our big heads back to their level, because last year we had a pretty similar team and we've got, you know, we're not competing at the same level we are. So I'm putting it down to the individuals. And if this isn't going to rev them up, I don't know what will. And maybe a clean out is what's needed if that's the case.
Excellent, excellent points you all raised. I mean, it can't be understated the performance of Kashima. They were very good. They were very sharp, and you can see why they're one of the powerhouses of the J League as well, with a number of incredible players within their team and the way in which they approached.
Dave, question for you. Let's see if I can pose a better question than you posed earlier. How do you think that our team of last season would have stacked up in this game? Specifically the team...
Without Andrew DeBoer.
Specifically, let's say with, because that was our strongest possible team and we went on a really strong run and we held the top of the table for a long period of time with that. How do you think we would have gone with our full-strength team from last season against Kashima?
I don't think that we would have changed our formation to suit Kashima. I think that we would have retained the 4-2-3-1 that we'd set out with. That's a team without Ronnie Vargas. It's a team with Dimi Petratos in the centre. You've got a team then with Andrew Naboot and Jason Hoffman up top. You've got a team with Riley McGree in there as well in the centre of the park. I think we come away at least with possibly with a draw, if not a narrow defeat. Certainly not a defeat to the team, to the scale that we saw last year. Last year we were a lot more aggressive to the ball. We were looking to play it on the ground, and we were looking to work our way through midfield and hit the team on the counter. What I recall most from the game is that there was a lot of blind alley passing. We were spreading it wide to the wingers, to the wing backs, but there wasn't an option, and they were pressed and surrounded by opposition. And their only opportunity is really to try and just hoof it upfield for O'Donovan. So my answer there is I think that we either draw or we come away with a narrower defeat, because our confidence is higher, our style of play is different, and I actually think we have a better level of player than what we currently do in this squad. I don't think Jason Hoffman by himself makes a difference, but I think Andrew Naboot and the pace, the raw pace that he offers, the direct approach that he has, is completely different. So,
And that combination of players and the confidence they had, that front four of Naboot, Petratos, Roy, and Hoffman, and having McGree in there as well, and also having the ability to bring in a fit Champness off the bench, who was at the peak of his powers before, which he wasn't in the game last night. I think we just had more attacking options, and I think that Kashima would have been. I would have not been taking us as lightly as they were. They needed as they did by the end of that game, because I think they probably could have scored a couple of more, but they just kept passing the ball around and we were running it, chasing shadows. And like you said, when we did get the ball, we were just trying to hoof it upfield rather than keep the ball on the deck and pass it through. But you know, because we were playing that back five, we didn't have the players in front. All the players in front of the back five were all marked out of the game, and there was no real opportunity. That was why I was sort of really surprised we went with the back five, like I mentioned earlier. I thought maybe going with the back four and then having three in midfield would have served us a little better and would have been able to allow us to push players forward a bit more quickly, and we would have had more options. But yeah, it's a whole mess of factors. But interesting. I thought maybe we would have had an outside chance of winning against Kashima last night if we'd have played with the team and the confidence they had from last season. I'm always obviously going to try and look through with rose-coloured glasses, but this game was a game we were never going to win unless everything fell our way and all of our players were on song. I just think too many of our players just went missing or weren't good enough, or confidence levels weren't at the level that they have been, and we know that they have been. But, unfortunately, not really much else you can say.
So, gents, I'll summarise here. Anyone going different than Glenn Moss for player of the match?
No.
No. I like Top Horse Stanley as a brief shout, but yeah, Moss or him.
Okay. Joel, you're good?
Yeah, all good. Can I just say one thing about Antlers? What impressed me most was, I guess the word tenacity. Like in attack, they would try and turn you one way, and when that didn't work, they'd try the other way, and then they'd retreat if they had to, but then they'd try a third and a fourth. They just didn't give up in attack, whereas we'll try and attack one way and it doesn't work, then we'll pass it back. But these guys are so, so tenacious. And then in defense, you know, the defensive recovery, if they do lose it, is like shock and awe. They just come at you to regain possession and intercept and whatever. And just the tenacity in both attack and defense was the thing that impressed me so much.
You could really tell that they're 20 to 25 years ahead of where Australia is in their development of their league. Their league started 30 years ago almost, but you could also tell the importance of that whole Brazilian link when Zico came into the club in the early formation. And I think that's something that A-League clubs have really struggled with, to embed an identity and stick with it. There's too much recycling, or, you know, sacking of coaches and bringing in new coaches, new ethos, changing. You need to have, and I think it was really evident with Brisbane when they brought in Ange Postecoglou. They put a whole ethos through the club, and that's how they've tried to continue it. It's had some level of success. Obviously, it's not going well now due to a chronic lack of investment from the owners, but you can really see the difference in the path that Japan's taken when they professionalized their league with the J-League 30 years ago, and when we did it 14 years ago now. It's a clear lack of direction across the board, and lack of investment, I think, is really, and it's not something that I think is going to turn around in the near future, because it's something that's got to be started from the grassroots and from an early age, and then you bring those players through. It's really something that's got to be nipped in the bud now for us to be able to see the benefits in 10 to 15 to 20 years. Otherwise, we're going to spend years in the wilderness with, you know, no discernible talent coming through. We're going to have players that occasionally look good, like your Arzanis, etc., but rather than producing an assembly line of them and getting technical players that can actually play the way we want and the way we saw Kashima play, it's not going to happen unless we get our grassroots sorted out. That was really the big, and that was something that Mark Bosnich mentioned in the post-match. He said, get that game, cut it up, show highlights at your kids' football training on it during a weeknight, because that's how we should be training our players to play from an early age. And I totally agree. It's something that we are not, Mitch mentioned it earlier, trying to marry ourselves to the Dutch method that's never won a single thing. Mm. Like, what is that really the best way to go? Are we going to be able to make that work for us? I mean, you know, I've not seen any players coming through with any sort of regularity to say that system's really working from a young Socceroos and under 20s level, that it doesn't really seem to be coming through with the players wanting to qualify. That's why Ante Milicic is available, because the team he was coaching full of the young kids didn't make the World Cup. So we're still not getting good enough players in our youth development systems to come through and be able to raise the technical level in the country, not just at the Jets. I'm not really sure what's happening with our academy teams, because I don't really pay that much attention to them, but it's something that's got to be, if the FFA can't do it, we have to do it on a local level, and try and get an ethos into this club, get the systems across the board, and be developing the young kids to be able to eventually look like they might come into the Jets team, but if not, go into the local league with a level of technical expertise that just doesn't look to be evident at the moment. That was a bit off topic.
That's all right. Well, it leads us probably, I don't know if it leads us into Adelaide, but let's talk about Adelaide United. Focus our attention back to the A-League. And Joel, it was a surprising loss for Adelaide last week. It was against Western Sydney Wanderers. It was a result for Adelaide, Melbourne City and Wellington drawing as well. That's, as we mentioned before, brought a glimmer of hope back into the Jets season. And it's going to be really important for us to get 3 points this weekend if we're going to maintain that glimmer and also continue to close the gap on those teams that are above us.
You speak the truth. That is very true. We need those 3 points. You know, we kind of probably need to win 6 out of the last 8 games to make sure that we're, you know, get 40 points and are fully in the finals. So, that you know, there's still a massive task ahead. Yes, they've done us a favour by drawing and only being 6 points away, but, you know, we can't think it's going to be easy. We're still behind. So it's critical to win, and it's hard to beat a team like Adelaide that's come off a loss because, you know, I think they're the type of team this season that'll bounce back from that, even though they're playing away. We've got to treat this game and probably every game from now on like a final.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And Mitch, it seems every year with Adelaide that they're associated with not having a striker, that they'll pick one up mid-season, as they've done this season. I haven't seen too much of Thomason, but I've not been hearing great things about him so far. Have you seen the new striker for Adelaide so far this year, and what's your impression been of him?
I haven't watched too much of him, to be honest, but Adelaide have spent the whole season without a striker anyway. Between Diawara and Blackwood, there's not much to write home about. The attack's pretty much solely focused on Goodwin and Halloran for those guys, and they've been doing it without a striker all year. So, you know, they've got a cardboard cutout out front. It doesn't seem to matter for them.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I don't even remember the announcement of Thomason being made, so that's how much attention I've been paying to. This guy just rocks up on the field and go, who the hell is that? I thought he was someone they picked up from the State League or something like that, but no, it turns out he's an international visa striker. So, I mean, Adelaide haven't won on the road for a month, Ferns. Read into that what you will. Does that bring you some form of hope for the Jets, given their goal-scoring woes and, I guess, a slight deterioration in their form?
Yeah, it's hopefully it's something that's going to be able to give our team a little bit more confidence on the night. Like Mitch has already mentioned, Adelaide have had issues with striking, and their main sort of goal outlet seems to be Goodwin, which sort of gives us a little bit more of a focal point in defence. As long as we can keep the new striker and Goodwin under control, hopefully we can shut down most of their goal scoring opportunities. But yeah, Adelaide's one of those really, they're a team, the fourth, fifth and sixth on the ladder are within 2 points of each other. Adelaide's obviously in fourth at the moment, but they're only 2 points ahead of City and Wellington on 28. And that's the sort of, looks like that's the pack of three we might have that's the chance we've got of overhauling to get into the top six. I think that it's probably more down to how shit City are for the rest of the season rather than Wellington or Adelaide. Because I think those teams on their day can pick up results when they need to. It's just going to be interesting to see how Adelaide go for the rest of the season, because they did have a lot of injury issues, and I'm not sure whether they're still having those. I haven't paid too much attention to what Adelaide have been doing recently, so I can't really say anything with any authority on them. But, you know, it seems that their squad's pretty thin. They've got a really good first 11 and a couple of good subs, but once they start getting a couple of injuries, that's when they get a dip in form. I think they were, but that they've done really well, to get to where they are now in fourth with, like Mitch said, with no recognised striker, which they've managed to bring in. So it's going to be interesting to see how we play against them on Sunday. And the new bloke, Thomason, I think you said, Thomason? Is that?
Yeah,
it bit of an unknown quantity. So it's, you know, that can work for or against us depending on what we do. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they go on Sunday, because this is a game against the fourth, fifth and sixth position opposition that we really need to try and get something away from. I think, you know, even a draw would probably be good for us, because it's taking points off a team in that position. So long as we can get something out of the game, that's going to be good for us. And especially with all the travel that we've done, is probably, you know, an ideal result.
Joel, how many of the players do you think are realistically going to back up for this game, and what changes do you expect to the starting lineup?
Oh, crap. I'm really unprepared for that question. It's a Mitch. Bloody another good question.
Mitch, well, do you want me to go to Mitch, mate?
Another great. Go to Mitch.
The easy ones to point out is the guys that played against Melbourne City and both the ACL games, right? So that'd be Topor, Stanley, Yugarkovic and O'Donovan. Are they the only three?
Trumbus.
And Katrumbis as well.
Katrumbis needs a rest.
I'd be so surprised if any of those four played. Like, you can just, you'd almost hope that they get rested. So, you know, it's time for the young guys to step up again, just like they did against City.
I actually think that Johnny Katrumbis will get a rest this weekend. I think he is tired. But I don't know who. I think that we replace him with Georgeski and we bring Vujica retains his A-League starting. Berth there. I actually think Yugarkovic and Topol Stanley play. Ferns, what other changes are you predicting for the team?
I wouldn't be expecting them to play, I think. I mean, it will probably be down to Merrick having a conversation with both of them and saying, hey, how you feeling? Do you reckon you can get through 70, 80 minutes in this game and then we sub you? But I, just with the amount of games that they've played, Katrumba should be rested, Yugarkovic should be rested, Topor should be rested, and you'd be looking at partnering Jackson and Bugard in defence. I'm pretty happy with what you suggested, having Georgevski on one side and Vujica on the other. I'd probably go with Cowburn in the midfield, maybe see, I don't think, because Kanda got rested against that City game, so he could probably back up, although Adelaide are going to be a lot more mobile, so I think he might have a little bit more running around to do. That might play into his thoughts a little bit, but I'm pretty sure the Cowburn-Rydenton combination actually looked fairly stable in the game that they played, so he might look at going with that again, and then having your having one of your guys up front. I would probably be saying to Demi, look, you played like crap in that game against Kashima. You know, I think you should amp a siege. So, you know, maybe he might be the one that gets the go to, you know, play the number 10 role. Do you play a front two with Roy and backing up and Shepherd, or do you go back to what we did against City? I'm not sure. But yeah, I would at least be thinking, Topor Stanley, Katrumbis, Yugarkovic would most definitely be rested.
So you put Redentor in Canter or Cowburn in Canter?
I think Cowburn would be the lock as one of the DMs. I think it's a toss up between Kantorovsky and Redentor. It just all obviously we know what Canter's like with his soft tissue injuries. So it will pretty much be down to a call, I think, from the medical staff as to whether his body can stand up to it. If there's any doubt at all, I reckon he sits on the bench and we start Rodenton, because Rodenton's played and he's done fairly well. It doesn't look like he's going to break down at all, so just keep using him. I'm knocking on wood. I'm knocking on wood to remove the jinx. I'm hoping that's not going to happen, but I would like to see Kantorovsky play that position, but I just like I said, with his run of injuries recently, I would say that they'll probably err on the side of caution and put Calvin and Rydenton in the middle.
Okay. Joel, what are you thinking now? You've had
time. Thank you. I've had adequate time to prepare an answer. I think Jair should have a crack up top instead of Roy.
He's definitely
confident after last game, and let's see what the Brazilian can if he can back up.
It'd be nice. We haven't seen him back up so far. He's had one good game and then a few games where he's been off it, so it'd be nice if he could show it twice in the space of a week.
Yep, I think what's important from Jair is just the amount of sheer passion the guy brings. Like, we saw it in that City game, he was just firing on all cylinders, and if we're a bit down in the dumps after our big couple of weeks, this is probably the perfect person to model our game against.
Yeah, well, hey, and look, the team don't play till Sunday. By all accounts, they're arriving back on Thursday lunchtime. They're arriving back home Thursday lunchtime. So I'm just working through myself And yes, I think that we will see Jair. I actually think Roy's going to start. I think Demi will be the seven. I think Stevie will start, and I actually think that he'll put Cowburn in there alongside him. You could actually leave Demi out on the right as well, put Stevie back into the role that he was playing last week, Redenton, Cowburn too. So there is that option. Don't know if Thurgate gets a start, and I'm not sure Joey Champness is up to it yet either. I'd be looking to bring him on from the bench and the impact that he had last week. Kane Shepherd could also be a player that comes into that team. All right, so predictions. Joel, how do you think the Jets will go?
1-0, Jets.
Okay. I mean, Adelaide are undefeated, Ferns, in their last three matches against the Jets. How do you see this game panning out?
How have they gone recently, though? That's what I want to know. What's been their recent form, and what's been their recent away form?
They haven't won away since January. So they won another game at home in there, and they lost last week to the Wanderers.
Right, I'm going to pick a surprise 2-1 victory. I'm going to be bullish.
To the Jets?
Yes.
Okay, Mitch?
I'm still in Ernie Merrick grace period. He basically promised that we'd make the finals. To do that, we need to win 6 out of the 8 games, which includes travelling to Perth and travelling to Melbourne victory. So we've got to win. It's got to be a 2-1 win.
Yeah.
We'll be back home. I think the players will have themselves backed up. I also think I don't think we'll have as much of the ball. I think we'll take the approach we did last week. I'm going to say 2-1 because we're never good for a clean sheet. So, all right, guys, we'll quickly go through the rest of the round and have a look at the other A-League fixtures for this round 20. Friday night, Mariners versus Brisbane battle for the spoon. This is really hotting up. Joel, what's your prediction?
It's the implosion derby.
Yeah. So it's a Western Sydney playing two.
That's the explosion derby.
It's got to be like, Mariners will be ahead 5-0 and then they'll lose 5-7 or something. Yeah, I think that'll be it.
Very good. So, Mitch, how many will the Raw win by?
I think they'll win by one. I think it'll be 5-4 and it'll be just like 9 own goals. It'll be awesome.
Well, awesome. Awesome won't be happening because Tommy Yaw has been ruled out for the season.
Segue. Go on.
Ferns, how many is the Raw going to win by?
Thank you for sticking your oar in. Seven points plays 12 points. So Brisbane, I think, too far ahead of Central Coast to be too worried. Central Coast, I'd really love to see Central Coast go ahead by 2 and then end up losing 3-2. So I'm going to pick that. Yeah, again. That can't happen too many times in a season. I can never tire of Central Coast getting some hope and then it cruelly being snatched away in the final 20 minutes of the game. It's the drug of life.
It's what dreams are made of. I'm going Raw here with a 3-1 victory. Saturday, 5:30 p.m. Wellington Phoenix hold a host Sydney FC at Campbelltown.
It's a home game for Wellington too.
That's what I mean. They host Wellington and Campbelltown. Yeah. That's Campbelltown in Sydney, people.
Yep. Yep.
No. The people of Campbelltown hate Sydney FC. That's true. They're all Wanderers fans plus down there.
Get 23,000 plus there. So, Fernsey, Knicks, Sydney FC, who's winning?
It's going to be interesting with this game, the away support going to clearly outmatch the home supporters for this one. But, Wellington Phoenix have been the surprise package. They've been sort of plugging away. I think they're the one team in that fourth, fifth, sixth position that are the most... I think they're the ones that are probably going to end up being more of a lock than the other two, finishing in that top six. So I would expect, the problem is going to obviously be the travel, for Wellington. They've done well when they've traveled when they don't traditionally, but they have had a couple of results where they've not really travelled. It's been a bit inconsistent, their away form. So I reckon they can probably get away with this with a one-all draw. Thank and that will, that will do them well.
Mitch, Knicks, Sydney FC, what's your prediction?
Your heart says Sydney lose, but your head says that Wellington and City have to lose. So I'll go 2-0 Sydney win just to keep our final hopes alive.
I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. Mitch, we'll go back to you. Melbourne victory.
Hey, you forgot me, Dave.
Oh, didn't I? Sorry, Joel.
Oh, come on, man. Oh, Wellington Phoenix.
He's not used to having four people.
He's not.
I thought I asked you before Ferns. I asked Ferns. So sorry, mate.
Sorry, my five. It's all good. It's all good. 3-2 Sydney win. Wellington score 2 goals. Sydney, I mean, Mitch Austin will get a perfect hat trick, right?
Joel, this is a serious, serious podcast. You're not going to
left
be serious.
Left foot, right foot header, Mitch Austin. Come on.
Yeah, I think we've got on record. I think we've got on record the only time Joel will ever back the Sydney FC as well.
All right, Joel. Oh, well, Mitch. No, Mitch. Back to you. Melbourne victory. Melbourne City in the Melbourne derby. Who victory are the home team? What's your score prediction?
3-1 victory. Easy.
Cool. Ferns.
Short and sweet, Bodie special, victory.
Victory. And then the final game. Nah, Joel, I'm just kidding. Joel, victory.
I think Bodie special too, but did you hear the news, the Savo, that Joyce could be sacked before the derby even starts?
Yeah, I did hear that. This is his only game to save himself.
Yeah, Bodie special to victory, I reckon.
And I'm going to say victory, come away 3-0 winners. Final game, Joel. Western Sydney Wanderers host Perth Glory at Winless Stadium.
Sorry.
which is a game that follows Perth. The Jets at 7 p.m. on Sunday. What's your prediction?
3-1 Perth.
Cool. Ferns?
Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah, 3-1 Perth.
Mitch?
It'll be a Bodie special to Perth. Also, I think this is the last game Wanderers play at spotless or winless, so it won't be as much fun anymore. But yeah, Bodie special to Perth.
Well, where do they move to? ANZ?
Yeah, I think like Parramatta for next season, and I think they've got one or two more home games, yeah, elsewhere.
Ah, okay.
Right, there you go. Well, I'm also going to say Perth will come away victorious to the tune of 3-0. Thank you very much for those listeners that are still sticking around, still stuck around to this point. we hope that you've enjoyed.
It's Thursday yet.
We hope that you've enjoyed what has become of the Jetstream podcast.
So this is what happens, Dave, when you invite four hosts all onto a podcast at the same time. We've all hosted this at one point. We're all trying to host in our own way.
Just
Dave, I'm gonna hey! I might be angry and hateful. But I'm not
one at a time, you bleeding idiots.
Everyone's got to talk.
Who's in charge here?
There is no one in charge.
I'm about to boot you all off and just finish it all up and pretend to be your voices. Ferns, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Mitch, thank you very much.
Thank you. And big shout out to Ferns and Scott McIntyre for their ACL previews. That was phenomenal. And if you haven't listened, particularly go listen to the procedure preview because Scott was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. It was really good. We're going to have to try and get him back on, I think.
And thank you all.
Yeah, well done, mate.
Thank you all listeners for listening to us today. Oh, wait. Sorry, Joel. See, thanks very much, mate.
Konnichiwa. Get stuff.
That joke's not getting old. It probably is. All right, everyone. Thanks very much for joining us. Get out there, support the Jets Sunday afternoon, 5:35. Terrific time for you to get out there and support your Newcastle Jets in the run to the finals. Until we speak to you on Tuesday, go the Jets.
I'm myself, Jeff.
I'm myself, Jeff.
Well, that was. What are you going to call it, Dave? Herding Cats 101?
Oh, I have no idea.
Too many hosts spoil the recording.
I think that's what it's probably going to be called now. That's it's better than what I had, which is contains the pod's best ever question.
That's debatable.